Venice is one of the most beautiful cities in the world, but its unique geography makes it vulnerable to rising sea levels. And Salvatore Settis, an archaeologist and art historian, warns that there is more immediate danger facing Venice, the tourism economy that's tearing apart the city's social fabric and civic culture. His new book, If Venice Dies, is published by New Vessel Press, and I'm very pleased it has brought Salvatore Settis to our show today. Hello.
Good morning.
How did Venice develop as a major financial and maritime power, and why is it no longer either of those things?
Well, the independence of Venice as the Serenissima, the most serene republic, ended a long time ago. It was Napoleon who actually ended it, and the long financial crisis of Venice starts there, actually, from the loss of its independence. But most recently, there are new problems facing Venice, particularly the loss of population. Venice had something 500 people living in it in the 1950s, and now they are 55,000.
But they must be there to take care of the tourists, so have they just all moved to the mainland?
A lot of them moved to the mainland, and actually 2.6 people are leaving Venice every single day. And they are moving to the mainland not because they like it better, but because living in Venice is too expensive for them.
Although there are these neighborhoods outside of the center that are residential neighborhoods, they look perfectly happy.
They are residential neighborhoods, but they leave this migration movement leaves the city without its citizens, and the risk is that Venice is gradually transformed into a theme park without citizens, without real citizens, and a place for people who can who are relatively wealthy people who are able to buy in Venice a second home. And to stay there on average 2.5 days a year. So a city like this is no longer a city.
Wasn't Venice created to some degree by people who were being attacked by Attila the Hun, by the Lombards and others, and wanted to find a safe place? How was it able to defend itself without the walls that protected most of the other important medieval cities?
Venice is a very unique example of a city without walls, because the walls were actually the lagoon. And there is even a wonderful inscription in Latin of the 1520s saying, what for other cities are the walls, for Venice is the lagoon. So the lagoon is sacred, this is what this inscription says, as the walls are for other cities. But the lagoon is not just a protection. The lagoon is with Venice in a symbiotic relationship, and the city and the lagoon form an ecosystem that cannot be destroyed.
Doesn't much of Venice stand on 10 million ancient tree trunks that were rooted into the clay under the lagoon?
Yes, these millions of it's an incredible situation that still stands. So this is one of the many features by which we might define Venice, the most improbable city in the world.
And since it's on these tree trunks, have crystallized, I guess, have never rotted because they don't have any oxygen. But we have these medieval engineers and architects building beautiful palazzos that have made Venice famous. Wouldn't the ground have been rather unsteady?
Well, the situation they were facing was constantly changing. So they were responding to the situation not by simply waiting what was going to happen, but by controlling the water. So there was a special office in Venice called Magistrato delle Acque, which was presiding over the water of the lagoon, of the rivers all around. So they, by controlling the water, they were convinced that they would control also the entire ecosystem of the lagoon, which worked pretty well.
And how long ago did that begin?
Well, the Magistrato delle Acque was founded in 1510.
So that was pretty sophisticated for the time.
Pretty sophisticated for the time, and was unfortunately closed by the Italian government 3 years ago.
Just 3 years ago?
Yeah.
It's always had foreign visitors. When did the era of mass tourism take off?
Of course, the fact that Venice is a place for tourists, that's obvious. The point is that tourists outnumber Venetians by 140-1, which is really too much, and that not all of them come to Venice in a really friendly way. Those who come on those gigantic mega ships entering the lagoon almost every day. This is very dangerous for the lagoon itself, for the city, and for its beauty.
And it comes as a shock because you have a sense of scale in Venice, and then along the Grand Canal shores are these monstrous ships. But couldn't the ships dock along the mainland coast and then just bring their passengers to Venice by Vaporetos?
This is what I would say. This is what most people, most
common
sense.
Why not do that?
Would say. Well, because there is a lot of insistence by tourist companies, and the port authority of Venice, unfortunately, wants to have those big ships because they pay a big fee in order to enter. So they don't want to renounce to this big fee. But this is really very, very dangerous. And one episode that can give an idea of what is the hierarchy of values in the mind of those people is that when the Costa Concordia, one of those ships, had a shipwreck in Tuscany, immediately afterwards the Italian government ruled that all over the coasts of Italy the ships have to stay 2 miles away from the coast, with one exception, Venice, where there is no limit. So instead of making Venice more precious and more protected, Venice is the less protected part of all the coasts of Italy.
And that was the Italian government's idea, or was that from pressure from people in Venice because they do rely on the tourists for their... It's pretty much the major source of income for
actually,
most of the people
both.
Who live in Venice.
Actually, both. But the Italian government had the power of acting against this pressure, which they didn't.
There are also, I remember being disturbed by the volume and frequency of the loudspeaker announcements from the cruising tour boats.
Yeah.
You're in this beautiful environment and suddenly these terrible noises. But is it true that the average visitor from a cruise ship only stays for a few hours?
Yes, normally a few hours. And apparently only 10 to 20% of those people take the time of visiting something of Venice. And sometimes they don't even go out of their ship because they are content with looking at Venice from above.
My guest is Salvatore Setis, S-E-T-T-I-S. His book, If Venice Dies, which was translated by Andre Nafis Sahili. If all of those people, the regular residents of Venice, have left, who's filling the living spaces? Are they all being replaced by hotels, or are people buying apartments and then not living there?
Well, fortunately, there is still a significant number of people from Venice itself who still live in the city and who are trying to do their best to defend the city. But most of the spaces are transformed into hotels, and there was even an attempt a year or two ago from the Regione Veneto to allow in the city, I think, something 50,000 more hotel rooms, which would be devastating. I think that a city where most of the citizens are not living there but are forced to go somewhere else is a city losing its soul.
But haven't there been protests from local residents, even though they rely on tourism for their income?
Well, they rely on tourism, but there are many Venetians who are convinced that tourism is cannot be the only source of revenues for the city. That there are other things, other activities, from crafts to the Biennale, to the universities, to other things. And I think it would be necessary to encourage people, particularly young people, to live in Venice, to actually live in Venice, and not to go to Mestre and then come to Venice daily by train or something in order to work in the city. Because a city without inhabitants, what kind of city?
Most of us who've seen Venice have gone there as tourists. Are you suggesting that we should stay away?
No, certainly not.
Because San Marco, it's impossible to walk through San Marco Square without bumping into somebody.
Well, I'm convinced that every citizen of the world has the right to go to San Marco once or twice or whatever in his or her life he wants to be. But this doesn't necessarily mean that tourism should be the monoculture governing all the choices, all the priorities, all the life of the city of Venice. It should be a component.
How can that be changed? Only the Italian government or the city government of Venice?
In the complex Italian situation, there are three actors, particularly the city of Venice, the Regione Veneto, which is the vast region around Venice, and the Italian state. They should act agreement with one another, and they should try to invent new policies in order to create new jobs and to attract people to live in Venice.
Swiss law restricts the number of houses in each city that can be owned as second homes to no more than 20%. Work in Italy?
This is what happened in Switzerland. And so I keep advocating for a measure like this. If this has been done in Switzerland, why not in Italy?
We have to talk just in the few moments we have left about the impact of climate change. At least some people claim it's climate change on what's happening. If you look at Venice now, you see the water has risen to the point where many first floors are now flooded.
Yeah, climate change is a big threat to Venice, not only to Venice, but to all the cities, including New York. But in Venice, the threat is particularly high. And in order to respond to this threat, a complex system of barriers has been devised, called MOSE, which is under construction, but it is something like 12 years late in relation to the projects, and which is more important and more worrying. It costs 4 or 5 times more than it was originally anticipated, and at least 2 billion euros have been spent in corruption.
UNESCO has criticized the way that the city has been managing what has been declared a World Heritage Site?
UNESCO decision doesn't mention corruption and MOSE, but it does mention the excessive presence of tourists and the absence of initiatives in order to contrast the consequences of that.
Now, I would think that the government in Rome would be concerned, because Venice is a major source of income for the whole country of Italy. It's also a source of pride, one of the great cities of the world. Why hasn't it done more to get rid of the corruption and improve the situation?
Well, I think the government officials and ministers pay lip service all the time to this point, but they are not doing anything effective. So why this is difficult to respond, but it's one of the many sectors in which Italian policies are linked to a conception by which business comes first and common good comes later.
Is the threat of Venice losing its status as a World Heritage Site enough of an incentive to get the Italians to address UNESCO's concerns?
We'll see. But so far, as far as I know, nothing happened. And the UNESCO threat is that if nothing happens by February 2017, Venice will enter the list of endangered UNESCO sites.
Salvador Setius will be speaking at NYU's Casa Italiana, that's at 24 West 12th Street, tonight at 4 o'clock, and then tomorrow at noon he'll be speaking at the 92nd Street Y. For ticket information, go to our show page at wnyc.org/lopate. And as well, he'll be giving a lecture this Wednesday night at 6 o'clock at the Bard Graduate Center, that's at 38 West 86th Street. His book is called If Venice Dies. It's published by New Vessel Press. And Salvador Setius is the former director of the Getty Research Institute of Los Angeles and chairman of the Louvre Museum's Scientific Council in Los Angeles. Of course, he was near that other Venice. He writes about that as well, not in an approving way. But that's for another visit. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to the listeners.